From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. It's been nearly 3 months since George Floyd died in police custody, and the protests are still going strong.
I can't imagine how George felt.
He had 8 minutes, 46 seconds of a knee on his neck.
I can't breathe.
In the days right after Floyd's death, many of the protests focused on one of the most concrete symbols of white supremacy, statues. From small towns to big cities, dozens of statues of segregationists and slave owners, conquistadors, and Confederate soldiers have been removed, sometimes by public officials, but sometimes by angry crowds.
I want to take you now to a live look. This is on Monument Avenue. We were told that the Jefferson Davis statue, as you can see here, has been toppled.
Jefferson Davis was the Confederate president. His statue was one of many along a main boulevard in Richmond, Virginia. The city is famous for these statues. They've been a big draw for people who visit the former capital of the Confederacy, sometimes bearing Confederate flags. Now, as these statues are coming down, you'll hear people, including President Trump, continue to defend them.
Our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values.
But what version of history is being protected, and who's paying to keep it alive? Back in 2018, we teamed up with Type Investigations to answer those questions. Reporters Brian Palmer and Seth Fried Wessler visited more than 50 Confederate sites, including another place honoring Jefferson Davis, his former home in Biloxi, Mississippi, an estate called Beauvoir. It's one of the city's most popular attractions, hosting school field trips, tourists, even weddings. As the debate over Confederate monuments heats up, we're going to re-air that story. We begin with Brian and Seth visiting the grounds of Beauvoir in 2018 during its annual fall muster, a mock Civil War battle. Here's Seth.
Brian and I decide to take different cars to Beauvoir and spend the next 2 days reporting separately. As a white reporter, I blend in here, where, aside from some of the school kids, almost everyone is white. It had been like that at more than a dozen other Confederate sites I visited for this story. But for Brian, it was different.
As an African-American reporter, I stick out. I feel that people see black before they see anything else. Reporting on our own, we can find out whether people will open up to us differently.
Madam, next to that little tree. Move back, please.
We arrive in time for fall muster. Men dressed in Union and Confederate uniforms line up on either side of a long field. They carry rifles and flags and push cannons into position. Then the fighting begins. Seth is in the middle of all of it.
I look around to see who's here. 500 people, maybe, sit in bleachers or stand nearby. Families with young children carry Confederate flags. Old bearded men wear biker vests with these Sons of Confederate Veterans patches sewn on. Two younger men wear army camouflage.
Some people want to talk to me. They tell me stories of loyal slaves and so-called black Confederates. I make sure to keep my distance from Seth so he can do his thing and I can do mine.
I meet an older couple from Virginia who tell me they drove down to support the flag and celebrate their heritage. They love it here.
This is the lady I mentioned.
And they want me to meet someone. Her name is Susan Hathaway.
She is the founder.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you? So I just remind me, you're the founder of
the Virginia Flaggers.
Oh, wow.
The Virginia Flaggers is a group that protests whenever they hear of plans to remove Confederate statues and flags.
On the highways, mega battle flags all over Virginia.
Anywhere a monument is being debated. And for Hathaway, this place, Beauvoir, is hallowed ground.
It's just kind of a holy place for us with Confederate ancestry. And the things they've done here are just amazing. To be able to walk where Jefferson Davis walked.
Do you think of it that way, as a kind
Absolutely. As a place where we can come and express our appreciation and our our love of our heritage without having anybody to sit here and try to tell us what they think it's about and what we need to do. And if they would just leave us alone, we would be fine. God save the South! Woo!
At this point, I'm kind of at a loss for words. It sounds like she's saying that the federal government should just leave the South alone. As I look around at the crowd, it's clear to me that she's only talking about one part of the South, the white South.
We're proud to be Southern. It's like Southern is the only thing you're not allowed to be proud of anymore. You can be proud to be African American, you can be proud to be Irish American, you can be proud, but you can't be proud to be Confederate American or to say you're even from the South.
This is a message Seth and I heard not just here, but at a number of Confederate sites we visited, including a cemetery in Virginia and a library in Alabama. One thing they had in common, the Sons of Confederate Veterans, which also owns Beauvoir. The Sons is a national organization with dozens of chapters, founded in 1896. Only male descendants of Confederate veterans can join. The group's mission is to vindicate the cause that Confederates fought for. During the mock battle, we see their version of history play out. Muskets crack, units advance, and men fall down dead in the field. The Confederates beat back the Union troops. No actual Civil War battle took place here, but at Beauvoir, the Confederacy always wins.
The next day, Brian and I return to Beauvoir. It's raining hard and the muster is canceled. So we get a chance to interview Thomas Paine, who was then Beauvoir's executive director. His assistant meets us at the door.
All right, great.
Hey, how are you?
We operate separately. Oh,
okay. We enter Paine's office.
Yeah, that rifle right there, that's the oldest thing in here.
An old rifle hangs on the wall to his right. Pictures of Confederate leaders are behind him, and a set of three flags, Mississippi, American, and Confederate, are planted on his desk.
Paine is a white man in his 60s with a salt-and-pepper mustache. He's a lawyer with a Ph.D. in adult education. He's not a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, but he tells us he's eligible to be one. He just works for them.
Is that Beauvoir is not just a place, it's a place in time. You should be feeling like you're actually walking back in time as a witness to what took place. So I want this to be an educational institution that tells the truth, and then people will come here, know that they can depend on the information that they're getting, good, the bad, and the ugly.
We already knew what kind of information Paine was talking about because the day before our interview, I shelled out my $12.50 to take a tour of the house where Davis lived in his final years.
Look at the chairs, how short and close to the ground they are.
Donna Barnes is the guide. She wears a full Gone with the Wind dress, and as you'll hear, she has a Scarlett O'Hara view of the Civil War.
You look from the wall to the ceiling, looks like some of the most beautiful crown molding, rich with color, and beautiful to see.
We experience this at site after site, places where Confederate leaders, who were slaveholders, once lived. Minute details about the furnishings, but near silence about slavery.
It's interesting to me that's not built into the tour. Why isn't it?
I don't know. I guess because I'd be here all day if I told everything about the Davises. Thank y'all so much for coming.
Donna and I step out and I ask her how she answers questions from tourists about slavery.
I want to tell them the honest truth about it, that slavery was good and bad. It was good for the people that didn't know how to take care of themselves and they needed a job. And you had good slave owners like Jefferson Davis, who took care of his slaves and treated them like family. He loved them.
They were not family, they were property. Jefferson Davis, who led a would-be nation created to defend slavery, owned dozens of people. Black people. And this place, the historic Beauvoir estate, was built with enslaved labor.
The idea that Davis's slaves were happy echoes through his memoir, which he wrote in this very house. In speaking about African Americans, he said, their servile instincts rendered them contented with their lot. This idea, which is perhaps too controversial to hang on the walls, still hangs in the air here.
And Brian and I encountered it at other Confederate sites we visited, where, to this day, Confederate leaders are portrayed as benign and beloved by those they held in bondage, not only distorting history, but denying the lived experience of millions of enslaved people.
My own great-grandparents were among those millions. Both of them, Matt and Julia Palmer, escaped slavery in Virginia. Matt joined the United States Colored Troops, the U.S. Army's segregated black fighting force. Julia and her family fled to Union-held territory. They emancipated themselves, like 500,000 others before the war's end. We wanted to know why history was still being erased and distorted here. These are the questions we had for Beauvoir's then-executive director, Thomas Paine.
I do think we need to talk more about slavery. And the reason I got that was not from the kids. We have a lot of our young kids who come here and they want to know where the whipping post was at. And the way we handle that, since they're young kids, we don't have a whipping post.
So what I hear him saying is that we can't talk about slavery at all because kids can't handle it. But what about those Civil War battles? We watched a lot of people fall down playing dead in a field. That kind of violence that glorifies the Confederacy is A-OK here. But the violence of slavery, Beauvoir steers clear of that.
We're judging a lot of what happened in the 19th century with our 20th and 21st century glasses, so to speak. We're looking through lenses of the 20th and 21st century and saying, oh, that's terrible.
We've heard this before. You can't judge slavery by today's standards. But we don't need to. Abolitionists, including the formerly enslaved, argued against the system while it was happening, for the same reason we argue against it today. It was wrong. And yet Paine defends Davis.
I think that would be an honest perception that he was a benevolent slaveholder.
There's no way to benevolently own another person's body, another person's life, another person's future. That phrase, benevolent slaveholder, is straight up lost cause language.
So here's a term we need to understand. Lost cause. Confederates who lost the war devised this idea of the lost cause. It's a whole false interpretation of history, designed to justify their defeat, to absolve themselves of any guilt for starting the war, and to vindicate their pre-war way of life. And this story is still being told at Beauvoir.
The larger goal of these once powerful men was to end the process that was reordering Southern society, Reconstruction. They wanted to redeem their status, their power, and their control over black lives and labor.
These fantasies persist because people have to believe. They have to believe that they fought for something greater than the continued subjugation of another human being.
Christy Coleman is a longtime administrator of historic sites, and she's currently the CEO of the American Civil War Museum in Richmond, Virginia. She's an African-American woman, and the center she runs tells a story of the Civil War that's complicated, at times ugly, and it includes the perspectives of African-Americans free and enslaved, and of Union and Confederate soldiers. In other words, the full story.
It's almost laughable when I read some of these diary entries about these owners, these slaveholders, who are just so mortified that, well, Jenny's been with me since she was 6 years old, and the fact that she ran off with those Yankees and da-da-da-da-da-da, I'm just sure that they, you know, overwhelmed her little fragile mind. But this is the same woman that you've had whipped several times because she has run away on her own long before the war. There was just this cognitive dissonance related to it that is really stunning. You have a narrative that makes people comfortable for the spaces that they're in.
We thought a lot about what Christy had to say, that these places are set up to feed on people's ignorance and make them feel comfortable about America's violent and racist past, comfortable with a false history of America, one that honors the Confederacy and everything it stood for.
By now, we'd been digging for months into exactly who runs these sites. But we had another question. Who's paying to keep them open? We filed dozens of public records requests and sifted through piles of tax filings to find out where the money was coming from. and we were stunned by what we were starting to find.
Taxpayer money is keeping these places open, and Beauvoir is a huge beneficiary. We tallied all of the public monies Beauvoir says it received from 2007 through 2016. It added up to more than $21 million.
More than $21 million, all from taxpayers. We checked, and that money continues to flow today. When we come back, Seth and Brian explain where that money is coming from and how it's being used at Beauvoir and other Confederate sites across the country. That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Reveal is supported by LegalZoom. For more than 19 years, LegalZoom has been dedicated to helping Americans with legal challenges. You can start online, and their network of attorneys can provide you with advice. Visit LegalZoom.com today for more information.